You're listening to Filling Seats, the State of Enrollment Marketing in Higher Ed, hosted by StudentBridge. In this podcast, you'll learn what's working to grow, shape, and sustain enrollment at colleges and universities directly from fellow enrollment marketers, thought leaders, and ed tech innovators. Listen in for proven strategies to fill seats this cycle and beyond. Welcome to episode 18 of Filling Seats. In this episode, you'll hear from two team members at Washington University in St. Louis, Division of Biology and Biomedical Sciences. Andrew Richards is the Director of Admissions and Recruitment, and Kyla Evans is the Recruitment and Communications Coordinator. You'll hear them discuss how they compete against other nationally known institutions, how they utilize a combination of mass marketing and personal outreach to bring in their class, and their take on increasing access for STEM fields. Let's meet Andrew first, then Kyla.
My background is in higher education is entirely experiential, meaning that I did not train to be an administrator in higher education. I am not a scientist, even though the Roy and Diana Vagelos Division of Biology and Biomedical Sciences trains PhD scientists. I am not a scientist. My actual background is in performing and liberal arts, both undergraduate and graduate degree, but eventually needed to make a change in trajectory for a little bit more lifestyle stability. And as an old boss of mine always says, the place you'll find the most MFA in liberal arts graduates is in higher education administration. So I followed that path. I've been here with Washington University in the division going on 25 years now. I started figuratively in the mailroom here with the division as a temp position, and almost 25 years later find myself at the directorial level overseeing a number of different areas within the division.
And then Kyla, what about you?
Actually, a very similar story. I'm also not a scientist, nor was I trained for higher education. My background is actually in communications, and specifically graphic design and visual communications. I've been a graphic designer officially since I was 17, and I am very much older than that now, so it's been a long time. But what I've enjoyed is communications allows you to transfer your skills from one industry to another. So this for me has just been, let's see what higher education is about. And I really enjoy the industry. It's a chance to hone those skills in communication, not just like visually, but also verbally. So I get to talk to people, like, whereas oftentimes I only am really working with creating visual things for them. So this has been an interesting and fun experience.
Kyla, why don't you tell me a little bit about the department and the school, how many programs you have?
So we are the Roy and Diana Vagelos Division of Biology and Biomedical Sciences at Washington University in St. Louis. It is a mouthful name, but we represent 13 PhD programs across the biosciences, ranging from plant and microbial sciences to neurosciences, cell biology. So we attract students who are very passionate about research science and about bettering the world through the work that they do in the lab. The division will actually be celebrating our 50th anniversary next year. So that's very exciting. And we are looking to continue to increase our range and importance and reach among other students at undergraduate institutions that are interested in pursuing a research degree.
Andrew, tell me a little bit about some of the areas that you oversee. And then also, what are the enrollment goals for the division? Are y'all looking to grow, maintain, attract a different type of student?
So I'm participating in this podcast in my position as Director of Admissions and Recruiting, and Isla is in our recruiting arm, if you will, area. She is the coordinator of marketing and recruitment for the division, and then I oversee recruitment. But a couple of other, I also oversee faculty membership. I'm also a director of our summer undergraduate research program. I also have a part and parcel of data reporting, IT, information systems, and alumni affairs. There's a lot of different areas that I oversee and have varying staff members that work with me in different areas. And Kyla works with me in the recruitment and marketing arena. Goals. Actually, it's an interesting question in that we have, at the behest of the dean of the medical school, we are moving forward with an expansion process at his behest and his support, I should add, on an expansion. For fair number of years, we were holding at around 80, somewhere between 80 and 90 entering students across our, well, at that time, we've been across 11 programs. We've added two new programs recently to bring our total to 13. And we have now increased or expanded our entering class size, target size, to 100, which happens incredibly rarely, I will tell you, in the admissions process. Hit our target on the nose last year. That happens very rarely. We usually either go over or go or come in under. I do know that there is a further push or eventual more expansion to come, hopefully, depending upon funding outcomes and issues. But it's not an even, I should say, a split of 13 programs divided by 120 entering students. We have some programs that are larger than others. Some programs, ones I mentioned, are just newly created or smaller. So varying programs have varying target sizes each year, but that is our intended goal.
Kyla, would you tell me a little bit about what kind of student are you looking for, or what's some of that messaging that you're using to recruit the right students? Because my assumption would be that many students who get a degree in biology, kinesiology, something like that, are going to go off to apply to medical school, PA school. So tell me about the student that you're looking for and how you identify them and recruit them.
Typically, a student that's interested in us has been interested in doing research science for a very long time. So by the time that they're actually talking to us, it's probably been years of them actually taking the time to do the research, getting the lab experience, like working as a research assistant in whatever particular scientific field they're interested in. So by the time they come to us, they are extremely excited and passionate about what they're interested in studying. So typically that's what I look for in a student, or the ones that when I'm at a recruiting fair or speaking to them online, the ones that come right up to you and go, not just what can you tell me about your institution, but I've been looking into it and I'm really curious about this program and it sounds really cool. And is the environment like this? And what about that? And they tend to ask, they've done their homework, they've done their research, and they tend to ask more pointed questions as opposed to just a blanket, tell me about your institution sort of thing. I also personally like to find students that maybe aren't necessarily thinking that they have a way forward, even though this is something that they would like to do. Maybe they feel like, oh, I've got the experience, I've got the background, but can I afford it? Is it a good program for me to be in? Does it make sense culturally, et cetera? And so those students to me are particularly like good ones to get in there, because I feel like our program opens up a world to them that they didn't necessarily think they had access to. And by being able to present that to them and have that combined with their own innate curiosity and interest in what they're wanting to study, I find that we typically get a really great mix where the institution meets the needs of the students that they actually may not even have realized that they were looking for.
So would you say that you are using more kind of personal one-to-one tactics versus mass outreach and mass marketing? Or what are your top ways that you're recruiting these students?
Actually, I find that you have to do a hybrid approach, because for us, especially, we're rather specialized. And so students that are interested in us are looking for a very specific program, but they're also looking for that one-on-one interaction, because they're going to spend so much time here. And it's important that they know that this is an institution and a division that will actually support their whole person and not just the person working in the lab. So what I find works best, like I said, is a hybrid mix. So I like to work one-on-one with prospective students if they email me. I'm always very personable. Hey, I'm happy to help you. What can we do? But also making sure that we're getting that messaging out to the larger world through social media and participating in virtual recruiting and in-person recruiting events, so that we're reaching a broader audience than we might if we only tried to target those students who are like, say, pre-med tracks or biology tracks. Not that the pre-med students would be interested in us anyway, but you know.
Andrew, what does the competition look like? How many other types of schools have programs like this? And what's the competitive advantage that y'all have?
Well, the competition is large. Every well-known research institute, collegiate institute that you can think of has programs that are similar to ours. Yale, Harvard, Emory, Duke, Michigan, Stanford. I can go on and on and on and on. If they play D1 sports, they have a research program for PhD trainees that's very similar to ours. But there, it's even within a certain arena of institutions that have similar programs, there is a collegiality among us. There is a national association called NAGAP, which is the National Association of Graduate Admissions Professionals, and which covers all graduate education, not just the biosciences. But a number of years ago, some of us who were on the recruiting trail met each other at different venues, just started talking and sharing information and tips and tricks, and that eventually grew into a subchapter of NAGAP that we call BioGAP. And this is institutions that have bioscience programs, training programs very similar to or adjacent to ours. And we are a subchapter organization and we share. So while there's competition and while when we get together, there's some like, oh, whatever happened to Joe so-and-so? I got him. Oh, you got him. Oh, we almost thought we had him or her. But there is a camaraderie among our group, at least. And I think it's true among even colleagues who are not necessarily in specifically in our group, that we know that like our students, we want to help move science forward. We want to help society move forward from a scientific standpoint to better itself emotionally, health-wise and educationally. And yes, while we certainly would like to have maybe better numbers or got this certain student or that certain student, we know that that student is going to an institution and they're going to pursue their PhD. And that in and of itself is that we should celebrate, be proud of, and support, because that student will hopefully advance our scientific knowledge as we move forward. It's healthy, but it does work back and forth.
How do you pitch yourself against those other schools?
One of the hallmark structures of our division is that we are interdisciplinary. And while we have 13 distinct programs, if you will, they can commingle with courses. And really, the programs are meant to give structure to the entering class as far as their courses are concerned and their educational training. But in pursuit of their research, their thesis research that they will be pursuing to be awarded the PhD degree, our students can work with any faculty member throughout the entire division. And we have over 600 plus faculty members. And so that allows students that enter our program to really pursue their research goals and interests and not be pigeonholed into only choosing from X number of labs that happen to be centered directly involved in this certain program. Because cutting edge research and scientific discovery happens at the crossroads of disciplines. The exciting science takes place is where you find, for an example, geneticists and biochemists and microbiologists all working on something like COVID or Zika. It is not just a microbiology question, but it takes a village of scientists coming at a problem, especially a disease state like that, from different angles. And so our students have the possibility and the options to really pursue their interest in their niche and their scientific research arena. And I think that's one thing that makes us different. I think another thing that makes us different is the collaborative nature of what the division fosters, A, because of this structure that we have. Again, to go back to the just previous example, when you have students from different programs focused in the same lab on a disease state, then it becomes a collaborative nature as well. And so that begets more collaboration across program lines, across laboratories, and even outside of the university to collaborate with other scientists around the country or around the globe, for that matter. And so I think those are two of the hallmarks that represent our program.
Kyla, tell me a little bit about which channels are most effective.
Digitally speaking, I would say social media does a lot. Most people find us through Twitter or Facebook, and so we have multiple accounts across different arenas. So that's a great way to do that mass market reach, because the students that are interested in programs like ours are typically are already following similar schools. And if we can pop up and be tagging other people and talking to different departments and divisions around the country, then they will find us that way as well. So that's a huge draw. I would say the other one is, again, taking that more personal tack. And we're usually, you'd be like, oh, don't send out like mass emails to people, but actually it works because we have a much smaller pool of students that typically are with us in our field or in our database because they're already interested in what we were doing. So reinforcing that, hey, we care about you, Sarah, or you, Joe, as a personal student, as a whole well-rounded person who we want in our programs. Doing it through email, weirdly enough, is actually a really great way to reinforce that we care about you as a person. Please come to our institution.
So the social that you're doing is mainly organic?
Yes, I find that an organic approach actually works a lot better. People can smell it when you plan something or when you write something that is clearly scripted and comes straight off of the presses of this is what you're supposed to say. And the way to get people, especially on social media, is to have a much more natural feel to it because, again, people can tell. I find that there are some tropes and things that I repeat simply because everybody needs a hashtag. So that's great. But the more that I can make it organic, the more that I can actually talk to people where they are and in language that makes sense, the better our return rates are, the better our responses are, and the more people actually want to engage with us.
Echoing what Kyla said, I think about people that we're trying to recruit can smell a canned campaign, if you will, and they can. And I actually think that that awareness has been increased over the past couple of COVID pandemic years with people doing more things online, engaging more in social media, relating to the world through social media, I think more than they were prior to the pandemic, just because we were indoors, we were cut off. And I by no way have the answer because A, I'm an old guy. And so that's why we have a staff member who understands Twitter and Facebook, okay, to handle these things. But what I find is that the trick is to, can we replicate through a social media outreach, the energy and vibe that we get when we are, and will soon be again, on the road in a hall with a line of 5 to 15 eager students in front of us having a conversation. But if you can replicate that somehow in a campaign, obviously not verbatim, but if you can get that vibe and feel, and that's what Kyla is also referring to in this, in making it real for the students, that they can feel that there is a connection, that you are speaking to them and that you are a real person using this media. I think that's the trick. And you don't always get it. And it's very hard to get that, calibrate that correctly.
We'll be right back.
Want to know exactly how peer institutions are increasing enrollment? Check out 3 case studies in the show notes featuring 3 schools who've grown enrollment consistently over the past several years, including a private liberal arts college in Illinois, a small public school in Nebraska, and a large public institution in Georgia. Or visit studentbridge.com/resources to see how other institutions achieve more, like increasing campus tour numbers, engagement, yield, and beyond. Tell me a little bit more about the events that you're doing and the travel.
It used to be very common prior to COVID. That was a lot of the work was getting out on the road. Obviously, that all stopped during the pandemic, but it has begun again. Kyla actually last weekend was in Atlanta at a bioscience recruiting event in person, talking to people across the table. So those things are happening and they're happening again. So there are 3 large national bioscience conferences that we always attend, and we attended them virtually. 2 of them are going back to being in person this year. 1 is still staying virtual, but we will be getting back on the road for those. And then Kyla and I are also beginning to identify other smaller conferences. They might be at schools. Some schools are starting to reopen an in-person graduate fair, which we used to attend a lot. Minnesota, actually, I just got an email from them. They're doing that again in person. So we'll be weighing those options as to how much we want to get back out there.
What are some things that y'all struggle with in terms of marketing?
Well, I think really it's keeping it fresh because they're tried and true methods that we're all familiar with. And you can go as far back as like putting ads in the paper and sending out like mailers and things like that. And things that would have been effective at one time no longer are. So it's finding ways, new ways that don't feel old and don't, again, feel canned, that allow you to really connect with people across digital boundaries. So I think that has been a challenge, but I would say that's not just a challenge for us, that's a challenge for virtually every institution, especially in the post-pandemic world, because we're all still trying to attract a certain pool of students, and we're trying to expand our reach beyond just the borders of the United States. So digital marketing, digital communication becomes extraordinarily important in that regard, because at that point, we're trying to reach not just like across distance, but time zones and languages and things like that. So being able to present a cohesive, consistent presence digitally is of vital importance now, not just for our institution, but like I said, for other institutions as well. So I think going forward in the 21st century, that's going to be really the challenge, is how do we replicate that same like feeling of having something cool in your hand that you got from an institution you might not have thought of, and make that a digital experience that leads you to want to learn more about that institution.
I was thinking about our videos. We embarked on expanding our recruitment through video filming, telling different stories about 7 to 8 years ago. And we've had some new ones added over time. Now I go back and I look at the first one that was like when we did it, it looked great and we loved it. And it got a lot of traction. We had a lot of data on the people viewing that and how long they viewed it and who came. You know, but I look at it and I don't know if it's because I know it so well. So maybe to someone who doesn't know it, it's still fresh because they don't know that that young man graduated 2 years ago. But I do. So finding that balance too as well. So is it time to invest in another video that sort of replicates the one we already did, which was a general, this is who we are sort of story to keep it fresh? That's, you know, is that a place to put our money? Because those are not inexpensive to do. So is that a place to put our money or is it somewhere else? The other thing Kyla and I were just discussing on Tuesday, she brought back a great idea from this trip to Atlanta about the paper flyers and how maybe there's a place to go that doesn't involve, you know, lugging all of this paper and handing out all of this paper and continuing to environmentally use a lot of paper and printing. And so what are the innovations, or going back to something that was an innovation and now it's making a comeback in terms of using it, some form of digital advertising that we can supplant that with. So
a little bit. So I'd love to talk about that. Obviously, we just had the pandemic massively affected all of our lives in so many ways. Is there an anticipation for a higher demand for scientists? All of the undergraduate folks that I talk to, they have the shrinking high school population coming toward them, but do y'all see a growing population coming toward you? What do you see for the future of this area of graduate students that you recruit?
That's a really good question. And I've been thinking about that as well. I hate to say it this way, but I think time will tell, because having done this for almost 20 years, 15, 20 years now, you can chart the rise and fall of graduate, at least biosciences. And I think you could say graduate, maybe not romance languages, things like hard sciences, physical sciences, business school, law. You can chart the rise and fall of application numbers inversely to the economy. And when the economy was in the tank, a 4 to 7 year paid graduate program was a great place to hang out and have security and gain skills and gain a degree that eventually, you know, but when the economy was booming and everybody could take all of their intellect and go to Wall Street and get a job on Wall Street right out of undergrad, they didn't need to go to graduate school. But this, what you brought up, the shrinking numbers in the undergraduate students, that's something that at least in my lifetime we haven't seen. And I really don't know. I really don't know what that's going to bring for us in the future. Will we see contraction in certain graduate educational areas, but not others? Or will it be across the board? You hate to say that because of uncertainty with the way the climate is going, with the way our health issues are going, just in terms of looking back at the pandemic and listening to all the experts say that this will not be the last one. That would argue that maybe we won't see a drop in numbers, at least in the arenas that we train. But that's something we'll just have to see. But we have got to widen the pipeline. We have got to find a way, and this is This has been talked about ever since, as long as I've been doing this for 20 years, I'm sure before that, about increasing the pipeline and increasing the pipeline in terms of widening it to embrace students that we have not seen in the pipeline. Unfortunately, there's only so much that we can do at the graduate level, because that has to start at the undergraduate level to get. But what can we do to help increase that? Because that's, I think that's the way that we may bridge this possible shrinkage of students based on what we're seeing in the undergraduate level.
You may only get the opportunity 3 to 5 years from now to start reaping the benefits of more students who have been given access at the undergraduate level. There's a delay effect to them coming to you.
And so there will be a delay effect if there's a shrinkage. If we're seeing the numbers shrink now, then we're not going to see that until, yes, exactly 3, 4, 6 years from now.
I think the key is going to, like he said, widening and opening that pipeline and increasing the diversity of students who are entering STEAM and STEM fields. And like you said, that's something that we can only do so much, because honestly, by the time they get to us, they've already been interested in pursuing a scientific career, at least probably since high school. So really, if you're trying to get outreach to students at an early age to try to get more folks, you really almost need to start in like late elementary and middle school to get those kids interested in hard science and physical science and biosciences, so that throughout high school and into their college years, they see that as an opportunity that is open to them and as a road that they can pursue. And one of the things that also is very cool about working at WashU is that we do have students here and peer groups that are interested in doing exactly those things. They are going out to K through 12 schools in the local area. They are working with high school students who are interested in pursuing scientific careers and getting those kids where they are at an age where they still feel like the world is open to them. And I feel like if we can do more of that and encourage our students that are already engaging in that kind of activity, that will maybe not solve the issue, but it certainly will help shore us up and present ourselves as an institution that serves the needs of communities that otherwise might go overlooked.
Is there an app or a tool that you could not live without?
For my purposes, I need my Adobe. Can't do my job without my Adobe, because that's how I create all of my various things. And so without that, I'd be kind of lost.
During the pandemic, I guess, Kyla, we could honestly say an app that we could not do without would be the app that Kyla actually created with a third-party vendor that we bought the platform, but Kyla created an app. And we utilized that app for our interview process that we had to, back in the end of 2020, 2021, had to move from an in-person to a virtual interview process in 6 weeks. That's how we conducted business, was through this app.
Kyla, tell me a little bit about it. Is this a student-facing app that they use to interview? Was it used on the back end to evaluate students? How was it used?
It was entirely designed to be an easy student interface because, like Andrew said, we had a very short amount of time to take what would have been a rather expansive visit, because during interview season, normally they come to town, we show them a good time, they meet with us, they meet with their various interview professors and things like that, and they get this whole immersive, this is what it would be like to go here sort of experience. Obviously, we need to find a way to kind of somewhat replicate that and get them an idea of what it would be like to go to school. So the app was crucial in that, because we were able to customize it and fit it to make the student experience at least as close to an in-person one as possible. So they're able to speak to each other and make networking connections. They're able to research their professors. They're able to look up their schedules. So everything is at their fingertips within this app. So all they have to do is go on it, and everything else is right there laid out for them.
If you could go back and give yourself advice, what would it be?
Look into doing digital options for things that you might not have considered. That there are better ways to connect with people beyond what you're used to doing. And finding ways to make those personal connections through a digital medium is going to serve you in good stead. Not only will you look like what's going on, you're also then forging more of a personal connection, because the students feel like you get them at that point, because you're not handing them a piece of paper or making them fill out a physical form with an actual ink pen, or looking, oh my God, in a book, a real book with pages and everything. They're like, what? It's crazy talk. But stuff like that, where you can find ways to meet people where they are, that's going to serve your institution because it's going to make you seem, or it will make you be more in touch with what is actually going on in the world around you. And at a time, in the times that we're in, so many students feel like the where they are and the institutions that they're with are disconnected from them in fundamental ways. And this is a way to reestablish that connection. The best way to reach me is usually via email at k.evans@woostl.edu.
Probably the lessons that I've learned in the last year and a half to 2 years is that things are not as necessary and needful as you think they are. And that in terms of a work realm, and that it is always helpful to breathe and to just remember, as I tell myself, when we're facing difficulties, I don't know, some marketing campaign's not going the way we wanted to go, or we didn't, but whatever mistakes that you make along the way, it's not surgery, it's not life and death. And I think that sometimes I am guilty of this, and I think many people are, not just in the recruiting or marketing area, but just in life, that stopping and thinking about, you'll work it out, it'll be what it is, the world will not stop turning, and therefore, as I've been trying to practice this more and more, it clears the mind and then you're able to think about what you need to do. And instead of just zeroing in on the problem and what has happened and how could I let that happen and how, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And no, seriously, that's what I would tell myself 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Maybe I wouldn't be this gray at this point if I had listened, if I'd been able to tell myself that. Folks, want to hear or reach me, it's richards@woostl.washington-university-st. louis.
Thank you so much for interviewing with me today. It was great getting to know both of you.
Thank you for having us. It was great.
Yes, thank you. It was good, great getting to know you as well.
This is the Filling Seats podcast, hosted by StudentBridge, where we help enrollment teams achieve more by fusing authentic storytelling with industry-leading technology and personalized digital experiences. If you're looking to attract more, amaze more, and achieve more, visit studentbridge.com. To connect with this episode's guest, check out the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. For more information about the podcast or to let us know you'd like to be a guest, visit studentbridge.com/podcast. Thanks for listening.